This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, April 30th, 2019. It is 6 minutes after 12. Just ahead on our show, the way Arkansas citizens modify the state constitution may change if Arkansas citizens approve a constitutional change to how we change the Constitution. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek talks with Janine Perry, University of Arkansas political science professor and director of the Arkansas Poll, about the proposed changes. Then, later, John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette picks his highlight and lowlight for the just-completed session of the Arkansas Legislature. And after this afternoon's Ozarks, it's Here and Now from NPR. This afternoon, the show travels to Alabama, where the state's prisons have the highest number of murders and suicides. Why is that? Also, four little girls were murdered in the 1963 Birmingham church bombing, but there was a fifth little girl. Her sister was killed, and she barely survived. A conversation with her, the afternoon's news, and more on Here and Now, beginning at 1 today, after Ozarks at Large. People with great ideas, including you, could end up with $1 or $2,000 to invest in that idea at tonight's Idea Fame Live Contest at 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville. Startup Junkie is opening the contest to anybody with a startup or new idea. One person per idea team will have 60 seconds to pitch the idea. No slides, no notes, just that minute-long pitch. Judges will award $1,000, and there is an audience choice for another $1,000. The ideas start at 6 tonight. Details can be found at startupjunkie.org. This is Ozarks at Large. In 2020, Arkansas voters will get to decide whether they want to change the process of getting citizen-led and legislature-referred initiatives on the ballot. The process is what got measures like medical marijuana, casinos, and a higher minimum wage before voters during the last two election cycles. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with University of Arkansas political science professor and director of the Arkansas Poll, Janine Perry, about these proposed changes that Perry says fit a national trend of what appears to be a tightening up of ballot initiative processes. Zuzanna asked Janine to first explain how the current amending of the Arkansas Constitution process works.
I think the first thing we should do is distinguish between the different kinds of ballot measures people find in a particular year. So one is that the state legislature can make proposals to us, and they can do up to three a year. And they don't have to do three, but just up to three. And this year, it appears we will indeed see three from the legislature. So those are legislatively referred amendments. That's the way that we phrase it in my field. In addition to that, folks might see citizen-generated, right? Again, this petition process or the signature-gathering process that happens to qualify those proposals for the ballot. And they can come in the form of kind of plain Jane statutory acts, you know, just sort of how a bill becomes a law type things, or they can be constitutional amendments. For an initiated act to qualify, you need 8% of the number of people, so the signatures of 8% of the number of people who voted in the last gubernatorial or governor's election. So I think right now that's 60 or 70,000 valid signatures. And of course, many of the signatures will be invalid because people will be so enthusiastic they'll sign multiple times, or they can't remember when it gets passed down the church pew row, or whatever happens to be the case. Or they're not from Arkansas, maybe they're not registered here. So you always have to get at least 20% more because some of the signatures are going to get thrown out if you want to truly qualify. For the constitutional amendment, the threshold, as listeners might imagine, is slightly higher, and that has to be 10%. And right now in Arkansas, that's typically 85,000 to 90,000 valid signatures. So you and your friends can get together and spend some months gathering valid signatures. That's how you do it.
And this legislative session, lawmakers have proposed a constitutional amendment that would make changes to all those requirements you just described. Now, that amendment will still have to go before voters in 2020, but what are the ways in which the process would change?
So it's an interesting confluence of the two traditional methods for changing the Constitution specifically, in the sense that the legislature has decided to reserve one of its spots to for a referred amendment to change the Constitution to ask us if we would like to change the process for amending the Constitution. And there are a number of changes that are in the proposal, and I would encourage people to look at it closely and also listen to the rhetoric and who is speaking the words, because this is actually part of a national pattern that is going to make it more difficult to qualify measures for the ballot. That might be a good thing. That might be a bad thing. It depends on people's perspectives in individual years and perhaps in a big picture, right, overall way. But one of the things, I guess some of the main things that have received attention are, for example, right now you have to spread out your signatures across 15 of Arkansas's 75 counties. The new threshold would be that your signatures would have to be spread out across 45 of the state's 75 counties. And, you know, clearly the idea here from the people who adopted Amendment 7, which introduced direct democracy to Arkansas 100 years ago, they didn't just want you to be able to go to a single population center in order to change a statewide experience. But that will now be significantly more true than it was before, if the measure passes, that the legislative referral to change this process, if that passes. One of the other changes is that it would eliminate what's been known as the 30-day cure period, which means if you turn in your petitions in the summer at the usual deadline, which is in early July, and you fall a little short as the Secretary of State's office starts to validate the signatures, as long as you met, or I think it was like 75%, sort of looked like you were headed toward the goal, you still get an additional 30 days to kind of remedy the problem. That cure period would be eliminated, and a number of proposals in the several decades that I've been following Arkansas politics have needed the 30-day cure period to kind of scramble to get those final measures, those final signatures in. So that would be eliminated as well. The deadlines would be different. They would be a firmer deadline. Instead of, you know, 4 months in advance of the election, we would have a January 15th deadline and then an April 15th deadline. For most people, that's also really sort of a tightening up of the ability to qualify. And there's actually one other measure in there, a provision that I haven't seen a lot of talk about, but sort of makes sense to me as a potential twist of rhetoric for the campaign that's likely to come. And that's that the legislature increased its own threshold for its legislatively referred amendments from just half of both chambers wanting to send the proposal to the people to, I believe it's 2/3. So my presumption is they thought, well, if we're going to make it harder for the citizens to qualify measures, we should also be able to say that we made it harder for ourselves to qualify measures. Because really, while we have seen an increase in the proportion of measures put on our ballots and that also that we have approved, the approval rating, I guess the batting average has been going up lately. While we've seen that, most of those have actually been legislatively referred amendments, even though we sort of have this vocabulary that amendments are run amok. So in this case, the legislature would be able to say we are also tightening the screws on ourselves.
You mentioned this tightening up of requirements to get initiatives on the ballot in states that have this kind of process is happening across the country. Why is that? Why is that happening?
The process of direct democracy in general has always been controversial in the electorate, among elites, and even among political scientists. As you know, and really it kind of boils down to, are the citizens as good a policymakers or a source of public policy, sound public policy, as our elected lawmakers? And of course, often, like most things, the answer to that is kind of in the eye of the beholder. But we do know that in any given year, because there are some states, even more than the 18, that have constitutional initiative availability, something like 25 or 26 have initiated acts, right? Just statutory laws available to them. So in any given year, we'll have 180 to 200 or more ballot measures spread across the 50 states. And the pass rate overall, I haven't seen these figures as recently as I would like, does seem to have gone up, say, as compared to the 1980s or the 1990s. So both the number of proposals has gone up considerably overall. There are some up years and down years. And then the pass rate appears to have gone up as well. And in the most recent cycles, unlike, say, the late 90s or the early 2000s, when a lot of the highest profile outcomes were more conservative, the highest profile outcomes in recent years have been more liberal. And so in my community of scholars, many people have commented that this is another one of those. There's kind of a backlash by chambers of commerce, farm bureaus in the case of Arkansas, more rural and or traditionally conservative interests showing interest in tightening up or clamping down on proposals that fly in the face of their particular policy preferences. It's not the first time in American state history that we've seen a reaction like that, but that does appear to be what's happening. Some legislatures are altering these measures after the fact, which was considered this last legislative session when it came to the application of the minimum wage that Arkansans just proposed and adopted, for example. And then other legislatures and or are pursuing the path, as is Arkansas now, of just tightening up the conditions for qualifications so that arguably we'll see fewer proposals.
So speaking of the Arkansas Farm Bureau, last week, Senator Matthew Pitch, a Republican from Fort Smith, spoke at that agency's policy meeting where he said that changes to the ballot initiative process were needed because left-leaning groups are using it to pass measures like raising the minimum wage. But is that actually the case? Because that measure in particular passed 68% to 32%, which would indicate many parts of Arkansas actually supported it.
Well, I think it's not much disputed that an increase to the minimum wage should be seen as a policy issue that's preferred by the left, that's preferred by liberals and typically by Democrats. But on the other hand, exactly as you point out, it had not just in 2018, but also in 2014, overwhelming support from the electorate. It was adopted with something like 70% of the vote both times. In addition to that, I've pulled the measure a number of times, and it has the support of Democrats, but it also has the support of a majority of Republicans and a majority of independents. The support drops off, but it's still a majority. So it's one of those issues that it is liberal, but it's also populist in the sense of being widely supported in a state that is, you know, where a lot of people struggle economically. But if that seems to be sort of in the crosshairs of some of the actors that appear to be behind this proposed change to tighten down the qualification measure, actors like the Chamber of Commerce statewide and also the Farm Bureau, who are pretty accustomed in not just Arkansas politics, but American politics generally, pretty used to having more access and more influence in public policy than the average person, and certainly more than, you know, labor unions or other liberal sorts who were backing those minimum wage amendments. So, you know, to me, this looks like pretty bare-knuckled interest group politics, but I wonder about making this kind of change when it's not always used in that direction. And one of the things I thought was so interesting about the somewhat subtle battle that was going on over this proposal down in Little Rock this year is that Christian evangelicals, the socially conservative groups like the Arkansas Family Council, were sort of, I would guess somewhat uncomfortably, but holding hands with the more left-leaning proposals like David Couch, who was behind the medical marijuana measure and the minimum wage measure both. So I just think that's all really fascinating. It's the classic case of politics making strange bedfellows because they both have an interest in trying to qualify without raising a ton of money. Ballot measures coming from the people, coming from their respective constituencies. But they lost this battle, at least so far, and the measure will be on our ballots in fall of 2020.
And as we get closer to that election, the rhetoric on both sides of this issue concerning the proposed changes to the ballot initiative process is going to likely get amped up. So what is your advice to voters as they look at this measure?
I would read it. I have some done some research in this area, and a lot of other scholars have done a lot of other stuff. And one thing we know is that people, even when they're looking at the ballot, haven't read it. So the summary is going to be really important, and it might seem sort of like the proverbial legalese, but it would be worth people's attention to read it in advance of the election and really ask themselves, you know, where they trust policy ideas, where they want those to emanate from, and maybe to try to think outside of the last election cycle or even the one before that and really ask themselves about the balance between Republican democracy with a small r, right, where we elect people to talk with each other and then to hash out a compromise, versus writing something for ourselves and then having a statewide debate among typically very likely voters, and then using what's kind of a blunt instrument, which is the yes or no vote. Again, political scientists have differing perspectives on this. Elites in the policy system have a differing perspective on this, interest groups and whatnot. But I tend to be most comfortable when we're not letting our actions be influenced by a recent single event, but rather, you know, try to pull back and look at the big picture. And it's available online for people to read. And University of Arkansas's Extension Office puts up wonderful material about everything as it's qualifying for the ballot. And then they'll do fact sheets every 2 years where they, you know, have the pros and the cons, and they do as objective analysis as I've ever seen. And all of that will be available to anyone in Arkansas who seeks it.
Thanks so much for stopping by our studios to walk us through all that.
Thanks for paying attention.
Jeanine Perry is a University of Arkansas political science professor and the director of the Arkansas Poll. She talked with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. The Arkansas legislature also voted to put two other amendments on the ballot in 2020. One has to do with the continuation of a 0.5% sales tax for transportation. The other would make changes in legislative term limits. Zuzanna and Jeanine Perry also discussed another topic during their conversation recorded yesterday at the Carver Center for Public Radio. That's how special elections may, or may not, favor the single issues on a special election ballot. And that conversation will be on an edition of Ozarks at Large in May. And more about the Arkansas legislature ahead. John Brummett selects what he thinks was the best and the worst from the 2019 session.
Big, tough sons of the Confederacy complain, and the a 20-member committee can only get 5 Democratic votes. 6 or 7 against, the rest of these guys take a walk.
John Brummett and Roby Brock discuss in about 5 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society presents the 21st annual KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series with jazz duo Kim Prevost and Bill Sawley, Sunday, May 5th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks. This event, Jazz in Bloom, includes libations and hors d'oeuvres. Tickets and reserve tables available at digjazz.com. Walton Arts Center extends their thanks and appreciation to their dedicated group of volunteers who commit their time, talents, and resources to maintaining the arts in the community. New volunteers are invited to join the team. A new volunteer orientation takes place Tuesday, May 7th, and additional dates will be offered in August and September. WaltonArtsCenter.org for more information.
It's about 24 and a half minutes after 12. This is Ozarks at Large. Testimony in a lawsuit involving a sedative used in Arkansas's lethal injections is continuing today. Defense attorneys from the Arkansas Attorney General's office began calling their witnesses yesterday. The pharmacologist and anesthesiologist contradicted expert witnesses in the same positions called last week by attorneys for death row inmates. The state's witnesses say the drug is effective as a sedative before subsequent drugs shut down the heart and paralyze the muscles. They also express complete confidence inmates are not conscious or aware of what's happening 2 to 4 minutes after the drug is administered. More than 4,500 students are planning to personally receive diplomas at the University of Arkansas graduations this spring. The number of students participating in spring commencement up 67% in the past 7 years. Figures from the university indicate the largest number of students attending commencement will be undergraduates. More than 3,500 are planning to walk during the 6 undergraduate commencement ceremonies, May 10th and 11th. So far, almost 850 graduate students have said they'll attend the all-university commencement, with just over 100 more indicating they'll be there for the School of Law graduation ceremony on May 18th. The first of 12 new buses for the Ozark Regional Transit fleet is here. The bus arrives Sunday. The other 11 will be delivered now through August, and along with 8 buses purchased with insurance money, will complete the fleet after a fire in January 2017 destroyed 20 buses. Jeff Hatley, public information officer with ORT, says the agency has been filling in with buses borrowed from other transit systems across the country. He says once again, owning all the buses that ORT uses has advantages.
The main thing is income from selling advertising. We couldn't really sell the vinyl wraps on buses that didn't belong to us because at any time the transit system that were kind enough to let us borrow them or lease them to us could have recalled those at any time because they needed them for whatever reason. We kind of held our breath a little bit. We've got 3 buses here from Key West Transit, and when the hurricanes came through, I believe it was last year, we kind of held our breath that they were going to need those back all of a sudden. They ended up not. We called them and made sure, and they didn't need those. So, but you never know. And so we never did sell advertising on that because if you spend $5,000 to wrap a bus and then all of a sudden, you know, the transit system needs it back, well, you've got to take that wrap off, and the customer that paid for the wrap obviously wants that to be replaced, so we would have to eat that cost, and that just cuts into the whole point of selling advertising in the first place.
Just allows for more flexibility, too, I imagine, and knowing that you have vehicles that will be with you in perpetuity.
It does. Since we were able to, for the first time in our history, able to buy a lot of buses at one time and be able to go through and spec out exactly what we wanted to fit our needs here in Northwest Arkansas, we didn't have to piggyback on other transit systems in other states that did that process, and we just piggybacked on their order. So we basically got whatever they had spec'd out. And so we had a bit of a hodgepodge of different things, a lot of things that a lot of the end users didn't really see, but we noticed just the way things were laid out and, you know, wheelchair lockdowns and the way wheelchairs fit within buses that worked well for some routes that we had, but not necessarily for other routes. So for the first time, we've been able to design or at least pick from the options afforded us to what fits with Northwest Arkansas on our routes here.
Jeff Hatley is the public information officer with Ozark Regional Transit. And the 15th anniversary of the Go Red for Women movement will be marked May 21st in Rogers by the American Heart Association. The event speaker will be Phil McGraw, popularly known as Dr. Phil, on his longtime syndicated television daytime talk show. The event will be at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers, and the Go Red for Women campaign is designed to raise awareness of the leading cause of death in women, cardiovascular disease. This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas legislature is, as of last week, officially through with the 2019 session. Lawmakers followed the formality of reassembling one last time on Wednesday in case there were any legislative T's to cross or I's to dot, and there weren't. Now, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, is asking his regular discussion partner John Brummett, a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, to pick a highlight and a lowlight from the session. John Brummett says he can point to an obvious highlight.
The major accomplishment of the session is that it imposed Asa Hutchinson's reform agenda. It's a reform agenda I mostly don't like, but it was imposed. It changes the state. It's a state that now has a different, I think more regressive tax structure, but that's what he wants.
So you were opposed to teacher pay increases and the highway plan and transformation of state government?
No. No, the taxes is what I'm talking about right now. Most of which I opposed. Maybe you're right, though. Maybe I didn't. Maybe 3 of the 4 actually were for. Reorganizing state government, perfect.
That's a super majority that you're approving of.
Right. And teacher pay, I'd like to, you know, Jared Henderson had a plan. He was this little-known person who ran for governor on the Democratic ticket against Hutchinson and got a few votes. He had a much bolder plan for really for reaching out to the future and saying, we're going to value teaching more. ACE's teacher thing is incremental, but you can't be against raising teacher pay. But I think the major accomplishment is that it changed the philosophical arc of the state. We are now into sort of an era, he called it transformation for a reason, launched by this governor. And he's doing something that sort of ends the previous era, which was a Clinton bumpers prior Huckabee, BB era. Huckabee, in fact, didn't Republicanize or conservatize. So that was the major accomplishment. Mm-hmm.
I will limit you to one thing that you may pick as a low light of the session. So what do you think was the most egregious thing that this legislature did?
One thing?
You can fumble around a few, but then settle on one, yeah.
No. Look.
You love a challenge, don't you?
I may be able to parlay this into
this isn't a constitutional amendment where you get to roll four into one.
Well, that would be thrown out by the Supreme Court if I did that. I'll just set the scene. A progressive African-American state legislator, fresh from being the campaign manager, I think, for Frank Scott and a bold transformational change in Little Rock, proposes very simply that one of the four stars on the state flag no longer represent the Confederacy or implicitly the Jim Crow era, which is when it was put on there and designated as such, and commemorate Native Americans. Takes it to a committee. Some big, tough sons of the Confederacy complain, and a 20-member committee can only get five Democratic votes. Six or seven against, the rest of these guys take a walk. To me, at that moment, 15 state legislators on a contemporary 20-member committee had just taken a walk for slavery. To me, I know that people object to making it that simple, but that's what it meant to me. I thought it was a horrible moment. Now,
I am persuaded.
Had other ideas, more long-term. He talks about a crockpot issue. I say in the paper tomorrow, it ought to be a microwave issue. You put it in there and punch 20 seconds and zap it. But he wants to cook it slow. He and I are talking on the phone about these four concepts that all the stars would represent. I'm convinced that he voted no because he thought it was all too quick and it needed more context. I believe that's right. If so, I have seen effective legislators during committee meetings over the years go down to Charles Blake and say, they're not ready to do this today. Let's pull it down and you and I will work this session to get this done. So that's two things. One, what happened, and then what didn't happen. That you know, let's not go through a session with left hanging that we honor slavery or rebellion when the governor is now in favor of the bill. I thought that was the low light of the session.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and his columns, including a once-a-week digital-only column, can also be found at ArkansasOnline.com. He talked to Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics, and there is more from their conversation, including an examination of some of the 20 candidates seeking the Democratic Party nomination for president at TalkBusiness.net. The city of Fayetteville is selling discounted composting equipment in an effort to reduce waste sent to the landfill. Late last week, Heather Elsey, the city's environmental educator, came to Studio 123 to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about the initiative.
We have a citywide goal to have a 40% waste diversion by 2027, and we know that composting efforts will be essential to making that happen. And so we wanted to work with, it's called Brand Builders, and bring affordable backyard composting, to Fayetteville residents. And they were able to help us put together a sale that offered these really awesome Earth Machine bins for already almost 50% off, so they were going to be $50. And then through a grant with Boston Mountain Solid Waste, we were able to offer an additional 50% off to 150 residents, and the bins were $25 for those 150 residents. We have sold out of the $25 bins, but we're going to keep selling bins at the discounted rate of $50, and those will be available up through May 27th. We're having a pickup event, actually, and so all of the bins will be brought here on June 8th, and we'll have myself and some other representatives available to answer questions and help people get started.
Is there a limit on the $50 ones? I know we ran out of the $25 ones.
But... No, there isn't a limit on the $50 ones. So we have lots of those to sell. And up to 250 residents, including the 150 mm-hmm. that received the discount, the $25 discount, an additional 100 will still receive our free kitchen pail and what they call a Rottweiler. And that's just an informational wheel that helps you maintain your compost bin.
And that's actually what I was going to ask is composting has its benefits, but if you don't know how to do it, how do I learn?
Yeah, for sure. And so through the city website, we've set up, if you go to our recycling page, the recycling tab, it says trash and recycling. If you click on our link, I've set up under our compost bin sale an easy to follow compost recipe. And so it just kind of walks you through what green materials are and brown materials and how much of each to have. And it's a really easy process for a backyard setup as well as that's what we follow for our commercials as well.
You say the word recipe. Does that mean only certain types? You mentioned the brown and the green. Does that mean only certain types can go in the bin?
No, I call it a recipe just to make it sound more fun, a little more user-friendly. But it's really the recipe includes the bin itself, having something to stir it with, either, a pitchfork or a shovel. Green is any of your nitrogen materials, your foods, even green grass clippings before they've dried out are considered a green material as well. Coffee is one that is considered green and brown. You can't put enough coffee in your compost.
Really?
Compost loves coffee grounds. And as long as you use the paper filters, you can put those in there as well. And the brown is your straw, mulch, brown dried out grass clippings, dried out leaves, all of those. And you can usually start with a 50-50. However, you're trying to get to that ideal ratio of a 30-1 carbon to nitrogen mix. And that will allow your compost to break down much faster. And disproportionate amounts of the green you'll get those strong odors, and too much brown is what will dry your compost out.
I'm sure the city has done a lot of research in how to achieve this goal of reducing the waste that's going to the landfill, and specifically with composting. Have you found any sort of research as to what the average reduction in waste ends up being, or is it just there's a reduction in waste?
Yeah. We actually, in 2016, we had a waste audit done and found that 30% of all solid waste material that comes out of Fayetteville was compostable. So helping residents either divert that waste through their own backyard programs or through programs the city puts in place, we've started a pilot program with schools and businesses, and that is, of course, with restaurants especially in some of our schools that have really been able to benefit from this. And so we're hoping to expand that program to other businesses where we see a lot of food waste coming from. With 30% of all of our waste coming from compostable materials, through education and backyard composting as well as commercial composting, we'll really be able to make to move towards that goal of 40% diversion.
And the pilot program is you're taking that food waste from, say, restaurants or schools, and then the city officials are composting that material.
Yeah, we have our own compost program out at our trash and recycling center. And anybody that wants to come out and check it out, it's a really neat program. You are able to put your green materials in there, all of your food, including, and ours is actually a lot longer list of what we can accept out at our facility, because we're commercial grade, our compost gets a lot hotter and can break down things such as meats and dairy, where in your backyard compost, you will not want to put meat, dairy, grease, any of that stuff.
I guess I would have to worry about animals, too.
Yeah, for sure. And it just doesn't get hot enough.
To break it down.
To break it down. And to, you know, break down the bacteria, for sure.
And once it's broken down, are you able to use it as, like, fertilizer?
Yeah, fertilizer, or just fill. You can sprinkle it on your lawn, or you can put it straight into your garden bed and just mix it in to make a really a balanced garden bed.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Heather Elzey, environmental educator for the city of Fayetteville. She spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda at the Carver Center for Public Radio last week. Compost bins and accessories can be purchased through May 27th at fayetteville-ar.gov/compostbinsale. Purchased items will be available for pickup June 8th. City staff will be at the farmers market this Saturday to answer questions about the program.
91.3 FM KUAF is supported by Penguin Edge Barbecue, offering weekend breakfast each Saturday and Sunday, 7 to 11 a.m. at the Mission and Crossover location in Fayetteville. Menu items include quiche, pancakes, breakfast tacos, and more. PenguinEds.com. Tickets for American music icon Sheryl Crow and American Roots favorite Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit are now available for their Friday, August 30th performance at the Walmart Amp in Rogers. Tickets and more information available at amptickets.com or 443-5600. The 27th annual Dogwood Walk takes place Saturday, May 4th from 9 a.m. until noon at Gully Park in Fayetteville. This fundraiser includes activities and demonstrations for all ages. Proceeds will benefit Humane Society of the Ozarks Rescue and Adoption, Emergency Vet Care, Senior Citizen Pet Care, and more. 444-PETS or hsozarks.com to register or for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. This year on our Wednesday editions of the show, Raven Cook, founder of Foundation's Black History Educational Programming, has been bringing us Reflections in Black. Each week, Raven spends a few minutes exploring lives of people who've made the world better for all of us. Most of the subjects so far have been people who were born decades ago. And while Raven says she's hardly come close to the end of pivotal figures of color from the 19th and early 20th century, there are also more contemporary people she'll examine in the weeks and months ahead. We asked Raven to come back to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about that and other aspects of Reflections in Black.
It's a really inspiring program, I believe, because it is something that I strive to make sure that I pick figures who I feel like really take on these real challenges and really meet them with elegance and really also meet them thinking about the whole of humanity, not just me or not just my community, but everybody. How can we all rise from the experience that I've struggled with?
And we hear about people who might have lived a century ago.
Sure.
Or half a century ago.
Mm-hmm.
Their stories are still relevant in 2019.
Right. I definitely think some of them I lean into, especially people like James Cone. I personally have been kind of on a search to really understand the intersection of religion and race and how those things are working together. And I started to lean into James Cone in a way that I hadn't been doing before. And I read his text, The Cross and the Lynching Tree, and I was just so, I read it in maybe about 5 hours. It was just that rich. And I was like, I have to do, he's a native Arkansan, I've got to do a show on him. And so it just became something I did, because it was just something that spoke to me so intensely.
I know that you embrace history.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're probably very proactive to find some of these figures. Do some of the historic figures come to you without you knowing about them?
Sure. A couple of them. I think James Cone, definitely. Stokely Carmichael definitely is just a part of my everyday reality.
I believe you once told me you had a historic crush on Stokely Carmichael.
I have a huge historic crush on Stokely Carmichael. In the biography on Stokely Carmichael by Peniel Joseph, he calls him the chocolate Fred Astaire. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's marvelous. It's just amazing. But some of them actually do. Lerone Bennett Jr. was one that I was just like, that's, I hear you. June Jordan also was one that I was like, I sense you. I feel you. It was just a vibe. It was just a vibe. Like, I would go through books and just allow the books to just be present in my space. And I'd feel this one. This is it. Like, I'd sense it. Mm-hmm.
Many of the figures we talk about, if they were born more than 100 years ago, we'd sure. all agree that's, for lack of a more descriptive term, an older figure. Some of us of a certain age would not consider perhaps people of the 50s and 60s older, but right. they are.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to suggest there aren't people now.
Right, right.
Making a difference.
Definitely people now. There is a show I'm really looking forward to doing on Nipsey Hussle. I really want to lean into that show. I'm not a hip-hop person. My mom picks on me a lot because I love old-school OJs and Motown. Most of the time, I know the records' names, and she can't remember them. So she's like, "Are you actually my are you my child? Like, how does this work?" But when I heard of Nipsey Hussle's assassination, when I heard of his passing, I was really impacted by that in a way that I have not been impacted before. I felt it. It was something very, as an organizer and an activist myself, someone who's always moving in the community and who loves where I'm from Little Rock, I felt the weight of that community in losing someone who was trying so hard. I'm about to cry thinking about it, trying so hard to manifest the potential and the beauty of that community in spite of itself, right? I just thought it rocked me. And then when I watched the funeral, seeing the thousands and thousands and thousands of people who gathered to honor this man was, and the way that his family and his parents, right? Like the way his parents found something in themselves to get up and to help us deal with our grief about it. It was, I can't even describe like that. His passing really affected me. And I immediately texted Lee and said, I have to talk about him.
Lee Wood.
At Lee Wood. I texted her and I said, I have to do a show on Nipsey Hussle.
And one thing that I love about that is because there are many people who haven't heard of Nipsey Hussle for many reasons.
Right.
Generational.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the West Coast and
right.
maybe he lived in Middle America.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways to consume media
right.
that you can miss someone like that.
Definitely. And I think his story appeals to all people because he was a businessman. He believed in that philosophy of I'm going to build myself up. Like, I'm going to build myself. I'll build for my family. I'll build my community. And I think that's so important to the American spirit that I just find it transformative. It wasn't just something that was Black. It was something that was human and beautiful and resilient and something that I felt the world needed to hear. And if I had any space to talk about it, I'll do it.
So last question
sure.
this time around. You have someone like Nipsey Hussle who is doing so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's assassinated.
Right.
Does that leave you pessimistic, optimistic, wistful?
Mm-hmm. At first I was really angry. I was extremely angry. But then I watched several of his interviews, and it is extremely hard to be a Black woman who works for Black people. And that's just speaking honestly, and anywhere you go. I think when you have a light is very hard for people who have lived in darkness for a long time to grapple with. And that's for any person of any, background. When you go into a space and you are challenging the way that people see themselves, that's very difficult. But Nipsey Hussle, in several interviews, talked about love. In most of his interviews, he talked about love in his music. As I started to consume his music more actively, he talked so much about love and pride and beauty and just who he was, just the soul. He was functioning on such a higher level than what I think most people were. And I feel like it gave me hope that if I started functioning in that same energy, I really started to think about balance. I really started to lean more into meditation. And this is super real. I started to read more about the chakras and like, how is my light shining? How am I healing from traumas that I've experienced? He really, just in his spirit and his energy, really changed a lot about the way I move personally in the world. It rocked me. It made me angry, but I became so much more empowered as a thinker and an intellectual and a human being and just someone who has such a voice to influence others. I needed to check my healing and make sure that that healing was being done properly so that I could really be an inspiration. He has a quote that I've made my cover on Facebook, and it talks about the highest human act is to inspire. But you have to be a whole being. You have to really strive to be whole in yourself and make sure that you're communicating and are a vehicle, right? When I do these shows, I'm a vessel between those that have been and are to the audience. And I need to make sure I'm clean, you know, cleansed and whole and accessible to do that work. So he really challenged me to start thinking about that and how I practice. So
transformative.
He was incredible. I really am taken aback by him, for sure.
Raven, always such a pleasure to visit with you.
Great to be here. Always a pleasure.
Stay busy.
Will do.
Raven Cook is the founder of Foundations Black History Educational Programming and the writer and host of Reflections in Black, heard most Wednesdays on Ozarks at Large. She'll be with us again tomorrow for another edition of Reflections in Black, and previous editions of the series can be found by searching for Reflections in Black at KUAF.com and OzarksAtLarge.com. The Arkansas softball team, ranked number 18 in the country, will play one more SEC series before the SEC tournament next month. Last night, Arkansas lost to Texas A&M 4-1 in College Station. A&M took two of the three games in that series. Arkansas will now host number 12 Auburn for three games beginning Friday night at Bogle Park. The SEC tournament will begin Wednesday, May 8th, back in College Station, Texas. The fifth-ranked Razorback baseball team is in North Little Rock tonight for a non-conference game against Grambling State. It's the final non-SEC game of the regular season. This weekend, Arkansas plays Kentucky three times in Lexington. And today's non-conference baseball game between the University of Arkansas Fort Smith and Northwestern State, canceled. UAFS will now end the regular season with a three-game series against Newman in Wichita this weekend. Northeastern State will travel from Tahlequah to Topeka, Kansas this weekend to end its regular season with three games against Washburn.
Building consensus is an essential part of our Congress, but it doesn't always go so smoothly.
Only four wanted to keep this provision. That's probably about the percent of people who think Nickelback is their favorite band in this country. It's pretty low.
Why would you criticize one of the greatest bands of the 90s?
Wow.
Democracy is hard, but staying informed, that's easy. Listen to Morning Edition every day from NPR News.
Morning Edition can be heard every weekday morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. And you can hear more news and information from our region every weekday morning at 5:30 and 7:30 with newscasts provided by Antoinette Grajeda. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, the militant grammarian feels again compelled to prove I'm not a good speller.
The spelling challenge comes up more often these days with the designation of people born 1981 to 1986 as millennials.
Right.
How do you spell that?
Catherine Churlds takes on Millennial Plus, biannual, bimonthly, and more on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. You can hear her on both the noon and 7 p.m. editions on KUAF. And the day after tomorrow, in Rogers, you can celebrate birds, bees, and butterflies. At 11:30 Thursday morning, there will be a proclamation declaring Rogers a monarch city, as in the butterfly. Then throughout the afternoon and early evening, events about pollinators and monarch butterflies at the Rogers Butterfly Park, the Downtown Farmers Market, and at the Rogers Experimental House on West Walnut. All of the events free and open to the public. Contributors to this Tuesday program included Zuzana Sitek and Antoinette Grajeda. Timothy Dennis mastered our show. The conversation between Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, recorded in the KATV studios in Little Rock. And those conversations appear on Ozarks at Large through our ongoing collaboration with Talk Business and Politics. Additional content for today's show provided by KUAR, Public Radio in Central Arkansas, and Little Rock. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF, and this is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Ozark. Let's end our Tuesday show with music from Ashley McBride. She will be at Temple Live in downtown Fort Smith Friday night performing. Barrett Baber is scheduled to open that show. You can find out more at templelive.com. We'll end with a song she recorded just for us at the Carver Center for Public Radio. This is called, fittingly enough, Arkansas. Thanks so much for tuning in and spending part of your Tuesday with us. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Kyle Kellums. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Rows and rows of blacks and yellows in the tall grass by a highway that don't see too many cars pass. The hills roll gently down by the church that saved my soul. Just a mile from the only home I've ever known. My first kiss was in that old tin barn, and that old hayloft helped me break my arm. I can't remember if I cried at all. I miss you, Arkansas. Ain't no sidewalks up on Highway 24. Ain't no stoplights. There ain't much worth stopping for. And that old swing was out on Papa's porch, and it's been gone now for years. There's nothing like it in the fall. I miss you, Arkansas. And I know it's rare, and I know what I had. That barbed wire garden made me most of who I am. Concrete empire outside my window frame tonight. Can't hold a bonfire like an Ozark mountain campsite. The lights on Broadway, they call me out. So I came out here to make you proud. Know you'll catch me if I fall. I miss you, Arkansas. Miss you, Arkansas.